Andy just joined.
Good day, and welcome to the T&F Industries, Inc. Q3 2021 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Richard Goodman, General Counsel. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, and welcome to P&F Industries' third quarter 2021 conference call. With us today from management are Richard Horowitz, Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, and Joseph Molino, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that any forward-looking statements discussed on today's call by our management, including those related to the company's future performance and outlook, are based upon the company's historical performance and current plans, estimates, and expectations, which are subject to various risks and uncertainties, including but not limited to risks related to the global outbreak of COVID-19 and other public health crises, exposure to fluctuations in energy prices, debt and debt service requirements, borrowing and compliance with covenants under our credit facility, disruption in the global capital and credit markets, the strength of the retail economy in the United States and abroad, risks associated with sourcing from overseas, importation delays, customer concentration, impairment of long-lived assets and goodwill, unforeseen inventory adjustments or change in purchasing patterns, market acceptance of products, acquisition of businesses, regulatory environment, and information technology system failures and attacks, and those other risks and uncertainties described in the reports and statements filed by the company with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including, among others, as described in our most recent annual report on Form 10-K, our quarterly reports on Form 10-Q, and our other filings. These risks could cause the company's actual results for future periods to differ materially from those expressed in any forward-looking statement made by or on behalf of the company. Forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company undertakes no obligation to update publicly or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future developments, or otherwise. And with that, I would now like to turn the call over to Richard Horowitz. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Rich, and thank you so much, and good morning, everybody. Thank you all for joining us this morning for our third quarter 2021 results. I hope all are doing well as the country and the world are trying their very best to exit the ill effects of this COVID global pandemic. Like everybody else and most of all companies, at P&F and at P&F, we continue to battle past these harsh effects of the COVID-19 global pandemic. The areas within our business still affected are, of course, the scenarios where both current and potential customers here have yet to permit on-site meetings or presentations for the most part. There are exceptions, but for the very most part, that's what it is. In particular, that's hampering our growth at the PTG, or otherwise known as the Gears business. And the supply chain disruption, which we all see on the news every single day, which has caused major delays in receipt of much-needed inventories, not to mention at dramatically higher prices. We all hope that this pandemic may soon be under control, as our thoughts and prayers are with all those affected by COVID-19. I would like to direct your attention today to the company's press release that was released earlier this morning, which includes the company's September 30, 2021, balance sheet, statement of operations, statements of cash flows, and discussion related to the company's 3 and 9 months fiscal 2021 results of operations and how they compare to the same periods in 2020. We believe this release should have answered most of your questions. In order to make better use of everyone's time here this morning, yet be mindful of the purpose of this conference call, I would once again like to remind you all of the following procedures that have been in place for quite some time now. Firstly, as we have done for several previous conference calls and has become our standard practice, we will move directly to a question and answer session after I have my brief speech here and not restate what is already in the morning's press release. Secondly, please be aware that we will only be answering questions directly related to the company's results of operations and financial condition. We must insist that you adhere to this procedure. Management will not be entertaining any questions that go beyond the scope of this call. And with that, we would be happy to answer any pertinent questions anybody might have. Operator, please get the questions for us. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. And once again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from Andrew Shapiro with Lawndale Capital Management.
Hi, good morning. I think I'll go straight into some of the subsidiaries or the segments, if you wouldn't mind. Regarding aerospace, this is both Jiffy in Florida Pneumatic and also Pneumatics inside of High Tech. Albeit for it was only for a small amount this quarter in Q3, aerospace has now improved from Q2. It continued, which was a decent sequential trend that also began in Q1. Are you seeing a ramp up in orders that supports this sales rebound trend to continue, or is there like a substantial lumpiness or a larger order that influences things?
Andrew, I don't want to, I think we should be clear. We're comparing an increase this quarter to an abysmal, you know, last year, actually, of bookings.
No, I'm comparing it. Richard, you misunderstand me. When I say sequential, and it's Q3 from Q2, I'm saying it was only a small increase from the last quarter, but it was an increase, and Q2 was an increase from Q1.
Right.
That's three straight quarters.
Right.
Where things are improving, and I'm trying to get a handle on it. Have we troughed, and are we on a, albeit slow or ramp here on sales rebound, and you know, are your orders that you have in hand somewhat reinforcing or reflecting that, or was there some lumpiness or a larger order that's influenced things in here? And the current quarter that we're in, frankly, the current quarter that we're almost done with since holidays are kicking in, you know, is this something that we're going to have lumpiness in, or do you have like orders in hand that this business, this segment, this sector, the business is stabilized and the slow ramp up of production, for example, from Boeing and your other aerospace customers, supports a view and belief that you know, we've troughed and we're on a steady, albeit slow, ramp. Unless there's something more exciting, that would be great to hear. But
right. So let me just tell you. First of all, we don't have much insight into what goes on. You know, we talk about it, we ask them, but you know, they really don't give us that. Boeing is still nowhere to be found for the most part. We're getting orders, but very, very few and far between, sporadic. We're getting more things from a Lockheed or the customers like that. Boeing, as you know, has still the issues with the 737 with the Chinese. And I think that's what we're told, you know, from the world and all that stuff, is that if the Chinese accept the 737 MAX going forward, that'll help Boeing tremendously. But for now, we're getting little bits and pieces, which is better than it was before, but it's not really anything to get excited about. And it starts and then stops. It's like sporadic. And it's, of course, it's a supply chain issue, you know, going forward. Joe, I don't know if you want to add any color to that whole comment.
I mean, you know, Boeing has stated publicly, and Spirit, which is a big supplier, Boeing has stated publicly that, you know, the number of 737 MAXs being produced per month is certainly higher than it was. I think it was zero or four a month there for, you know, throughout the pandemic. And I think earlier this year, you know, reading the reports, we had read that something like 15 or 20, and I think they're now looking at Q1 of like 30 a month. So obviously that's way better than four. But I think they were at like 52 a month before the pandemic. And plus, we also don't really even know how much inventory of our tools are sitting at Boeing. We don't really have any idea. So there could also be a delay in getting more orders until they work through what inventory they have. But having said all that, 30 planes a month is a big improvement from where we were, and hopefully that will continue and lead to more orders eventually.
Right.
And their order business with you actually didn't drop off at the start of the pandemic. It actually dropped off even earlier when the 737 was grounded, and they, which was actually well before the pandemic began, and they had to scale back the production lines because their inventory of completed planes was backing up.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. On a previous call, you discussed how.
And they stated publicly that they have a tremendous inventory of planes. I think I may not have the exact number, but it's over. I think, I believe it's over 200 planes that they state are.
They have a ton of planes. They've also have been shipping planes now. I think faster than they're producing, but that inventory is still high of planes.
Right.
But if they're making 30 a month, or they were making 15 a month, they're arguably losing. And using wearing down and using your tools, because your tools, you know, have a certain amount of like lifespan in use, and they lose them. It's somewhat of a replacement business, right? In terms of your products, your legacy products, you provide them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. On a previous call, you discussed how you have you've had the full suite of all your aerospace tools, including some new ones. I don't know if it was impact wrenches or there's some specially designed tools that could serve aerospace that you were excited about. You're ready to present to both Boeing and Airbus once you're able to get into their facilities again. I think on the last call you talked about you've been able to get into Boeing to meet or to pitch and talk about your existing legacy lines, but they hadn't been able to, and no one was focusing on approving new tools, and you hadn't been able to get into Airbus. What are the status of things being able to get into either the Boeing universe, Echoverse, or into the Airbus area to introduce and to pitch on these new tools?
Yeah, Airbus is still the same situation. We've had some appointments. I believe we had an appointment, but they're really not there much. And the same thing is really at Boeing. Admittedly, there are some people at Boeing now, more than there were before, but still very slow go. Very, very, very slow go. Now we're hearing early January, I believe they announced in the paper last week or the week before, that they're looking to thinking about them, but now the mandate with the vaccine, maybe slowing that down. I don't know, but we just in general, I would say we could pick apart Airbus, Boeing, or for that matter, any other company. But for the very, very most part, it's few and far between that we get to see people in public, and we're not selling a paperclip. We're selling an engineered product, and we need to see people, they need to touch and feel, they need to be able to test it and all that stuff. So it's very, very slow go still. Gears and everything.
Okay. That's the PTG side, not the aerospace, though, right? When you say gears.
Yeah, I said both.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand. And with respect to the new product development, You had said on prior calls that was still ongoing, right? Because that's all within in your area. Do you have other new products that are on the we'll call it front burner to introduce once these doors open for you to get in front of them, or you have enough of the new ones already designed and developed that's not a major area of focus for you at the company?
It's always a major focus, but the latter is more the norm for now. What'd you say, Joe?
I mean, we have tools under development continuously, but you know, regardless of what we've got, we can't seem to get in front of the people we need to get in front of in the way we'd like. So it's all it almost doesn't matter how much we've got under development until we get more meetings set up.
Right. And this isn't a market share thing, right? It's like others are getting meetings. No one's getting these meetings, right?
No. I know Airbus isn't taking meetings or very infrequently. It's not about us.
No.
Okay.
Trust me.
You cut out. I'm sorry, Richard.
No, I said if we're not getting in, anybody else getting in, we'd be getting in too.
Okay. And you talked about in terms of vaccination requirements and everything else. I've asked on the prior quarters, and you were assembling that information and also waiting for guidance. I think you're an entity that has over 100 employees. You're providing products as a subcontractor or two subcontractors of federal contracts, in particular on the defense side. Do you have an estimate of the percentage of your workforce presently vaccinated with the first shot or fully vaccinated? And have you initiated or considered initiating financial incentives or bonuses for employees who get vaccinated or now given the government's authorization mandates?
Joe, go ahead.
We don't disclose what percentage of our employees are vaccinated. We're not a government contractor, just so you know. Technically, we do not. We're not a government contractor. We sell to people who sell to the government. I will say this. We have had extremely little interruption. We've had no interruption in operations and very, very little lost time from personnel due to anything related to COVID or COVID prevention of what quarantines required. Very little.
Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah, and
if you have problems,
Andrew, a federal judge, I believe, just like in the last hour, halted the Biden mandate. I saw that on the news this morning, so I don't know what that means, but it's certainly very controversial.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But you have also stated that there's problems for everyone to get into, European or elsewhere, and that they're going to they may have vaccination mandates. Are your sales and engineering force, the people who have to go out and meet with these or get meetings with these in order for us to, make some additional footholds here and reinitiate growth, is that crew all vaxxed up?
We can't discuss that, Andrew. Yeah. It's a Privacy Act issue, and we can't discuss what people's personal things are.
It's not inhibiting our vaccination status of our employees is not inhibiting our ability to grow and service customers.
Great.
That's
okay.
Your question. Okay.
Yeah, and are you encountering pushback or employee turnover in light of this evolution towards vaccination, non-vaccination, et cetera? No, good. I have more questions. I'll back out into the queue, but thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And once again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. We'll hear next from Meenachem Soller with a private investor.
Hello.
Hi, good morning. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah,
we hear you.
I'm just curious, given the very low trading volume and low market cap. Have you considered delisting from the NASDAQ and switching to an OTC listing as a cost-saving measure?
Joe, you want to take that?
Well, I mean, certainly I'm sorry, Richard?
Go ahead.
Yeah, we don't really have we can't really comment on our
right.
Listing status. NASDAQ Dow now. We follow the NASDAQ rules. I don't exactly know what would go into.
Joe, we just cannot comment about it. It's not germane to this call, and we can't comment on that. Sorry. Any other questions?
I don't mean this to be insensitive, but is there any executive succession plan in place, or is that just something the board's going to deal with as it comes up?
I'm sorry, you got cut off there. Could you say that again, please?
Is there any plan for succession of executives in place, or is that something that the board will deal with as it comes up?
With the board, deals with it very regularly for several years. So the answer to your question is yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And once again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. It appears that we have no additional questions in the queue at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to management for any additional or closing remarks.
I would wait for a minute. I'm fairly certain that Andrew Shapiro is probably going to have some more
questions. Yeah, he stepped out for a moment, and he said he would be coming back in. So let's give him another minute before we go.
Absolutely. Andrew has recued. Andrew, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I had actually recued before. I don't know, understand what the technical issue is, but I'm here. I have, several other questions, if you don't mind. Now, while we've discussed the potential business opportunities for PNF to pursue with Airbus and the large existing share of business you have with Boeing and its Echoverse, do you have aerospace business already selling product into Bombardier? Or is that an opportunity to pursue, and of course, one not requiring overseas travel, perhaps less of a hindrance to getting in there and winning new business?
Go ahead, Joe. I mean, we sell them.
We call on essentially every aircraft manufacturer in the world that we can call on. So Bombardier is absolutely one of them. I couldn't tell you right now what we've got going on with them, if anything, but I know they're on the hit list. So
right. We're
not precluded from speaking to anybody. We talk to everybody, and if we've got a solution that works for them, we sell them tools.
Mm-hmm. And then for what part of the third quarter, if any, were you able to conduct on-site visits with current or prospective customers for both, for your PTG area? I know, I understand why it's needed, and you really never had the chance to do it because the pandemic kicked in just as you were moving the equipment into Pennsylvania. But I think on the last call you talked about some things were starting to open, and I'm wondering, have you been able to get into still some more current or prospective customers? And having done that in those instances, has that resulted in some new business?
We have a very long list of prospects that we've spoken to, mostly telephonically. There are and have been some examples of companies that have let us, I'm not going to say that nobody has let us in the door. There are some that have, and we've had some reasonably good success on the ones that we have. We've had a pretty good hit rate, but it's not enough to really move the needle right now. It's a very long process, unfortunately, and as an engineered product, and it's just taking a long time. And we keep hearing, they keep kicking it down the road. Some people are saying right after Christmas, some people are saying at the end of the first quarter. I think everybody's kind of like in wait and see mode, but I don't know if that's answering your question,
I would just add, Andrew, to answer the last part of your question, if we can get in front of somebody, and this is assuming it's not a current customer, it's a potential new customer, and we have the means to solve their problem, I'd say we have a pretty good success rate. We don't have as many of those opportunities as we'd like right now.
Right.
Okay. And since this was a new business segment and focus, et cetera, again, as we hit the pandemic, and I've been an investor for 3 decades here, I don't have the experience yet with this inside of your eye. Okay, you get in to the new customer, you make your pitch, you have a good chance of getting the business if you have the capabilities for it. Now, assuming you have the capabilities and they give you the order, how long is the time window for that order then to turn into reportable revenue stream? Is it a quarter? Is it multiple quarters? I'm not sure how, because I, it's an engineered product, but what's the time window? What's the process here?
Yeah, I mean, Joe, you can chime in also, but it varies on the product and it varies what the need is. But I would say, you know, it's somewhere between 3 and 6 months, generally speaking.
Okay.
Is that correct? Are you with me on that?
Yeah, I think that it certainly could be as long as 6 months, depending on the complexity. But I would say more of them are closer to 3 months. From the time, well, it depends on when you're keeping score. From the time, I mean, there's always a series of meetings, and this is very iterative. You go in there, you find out what their need is. Maybe you take a sample back with you. We analyze it. We come back to them. We talk a little bit more. Maybe they want to make a change. So, you know, it depends on the complexity. If it's not that complex, it's probably less than 3 months. But there's, mm-hmm. you know, but the more complexity there is, the longer it gets.
Okay. And now you get the order. You get the order, and it sounds like you go back and, you know, you go to your machine shop and you're doing this stuff. To what extent is your ability to fulfill their needs dependent on your supply chains? Is this more like the bulk of this is all in-house and domestic and not a dependent on supply chain problems that are you're experiencing, obviously, with your importation?
Well, again, it depends on the product and what it really is. You know, if it's gears, I mean, it depends on what it is. It just depends. I don't think we can give you a blanket answer, but supply chain issues are affecting everybody everywhere, including, you know, just metal, you know, from metal to grind gears, then to gears. It's all an issue. I'm not saying that we don't get our supplies. We do. We don't get them as a timely fashion, and we're not getting them at the prices that we've had it in the past, we or anybody else. So I don't think we can give you a straight answer on that, Andrew, because it really honestly depends on.
Well, I'm not trying to get into the micro detail of any particular order, but in general, I'm trying to understand, this is a different line of business than the manufacturing and importation of tools from Taiwan, right? I mean, you're not sitting on container ships. So your basic raw materials, your basic supplies to meet the needs of your PTG customer, that's basically hard metal stock that you're cutting down and machining. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
that's okay.
So in that sense, you're not as supply dependent as you are in the other portion of your automotive parts and to other tools business. Okay. Now, would you say that PTG and Hi-Tech are potentially a domestic supply chain solution to your customers versus what they otherwise might have been dependent on or looking to?
Joe, you can answer that question, but not really.
Okay.
But Joe, why don't you answer? You can explain.
Well, let me go back to your finish commenting on your prior question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for the most part, it's all domestic. However, we can't do every single process within the four walls in Punxsutawney and the four walls in Cranberry. There is some grinding we can't do depending on tolerances. There's some heat treating we can't do because we don't have a heat treating facility. There's some hardening that might be required that requires some outside processing. So that's not done overseas, but it's not in our building. So to the extent those companies have issues of their own, whether it be employees or material or whatever, you know, that could slow us down and has slowed us down on occasion. You know, with respect, I think Richard's mostly right about, in general, we're not a supplier to replace imported product. But, yeah, I'm sure there are potential customers out there that are importing product that would like a domestic source. So, you know, depending on what it is, we're, you know, it's a viable option, but it's not, you know, it's not the lion's share of the business or you know, where we see the biggest potential. But certainly I think it's logical that in some cases mm-hmm. that might be. So.
Now your high-tech tooling, whether it's into oil and gas, ATP, or other things, you know, Florida Pneumatic, I know a lot of that stuff's imported to Taiwan or elsewhere in Asia, okay? On the high-tech side, is that mostly, are you a onshore, again, a potential onshore solution to your customers in the high-tech side and the high-tech tools, or you have a meaningful amount of offshore supply dependence?
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm not sure. Are you saying on the high-tech side, can we replace can we take the place of another vendor who's importing? Is that what you're saying? Is it the same question you asked about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's less engineered, but, you know, you're manufacturing at high tech where Florida Pneumatic has a decent amount of importation.
Yeah, that was an interesting question. Go ahead.
I think high tech's more manufacturing than, let's say, Florida Pneumatic is. And
yeah.
So in that sense, if that is the case, are you more of an onshoring solution, again, where there would be from people who want to do onshoring,
they might come to high tech? No, and because the high tech tools are very heavy duty in general. They don't import well. They're small quantities, highly engineered. It's very expensive to ship something that heavy. The quantities are small.
So your competition is already onshore, is what you're saying.
I would say for the most part, but not everywhere. Certainly, we're competing against some Asian-made tools. But we don't see mm-hmm. those necessarily as our competition.
And your supply chain for the high tech side, where you're doing more of the manufacturing, that's mostly again domestic or getting down to the,
yeah.
you know, the basic raw metal material.
Yeah, for the most part, sure.
Okay. Now, do you have any opportunities to onshore more of what is going on the Florida Pneumatic and on the automotive tool side that could address or alleviate some of your supply chain difficulties, or you and the rest of the industry have, you know, everything has to come from offshore on that one?
Well, remember, in aerospace, it's mostly not offshore, as you know,
right.
or maybe don't know. But
yeah. I visited Jiffy. Okay. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. So the rest of Florida Pneumatic, you know, U.S. manufacturing, I just don't think we can get there. Now, could we get there in some other part of North America? I don't know, maybe, but it's not really – we can't really compete with those numbers. It's a great thought, but for high volume, you know, relatively low or entry level tools, it's just not possible.
Okay. And thus your competitors are similarly situated. So your decline in the sales side, do you feel it's resulting in barren shelves and at distributors and barren shelves at Home Depot, or that others have been gaining some of that shelf space and share?
Yeah, I think there's enough. Nobody's gained. This is my opinion. We think there's enough inventory in the channel. I don't think people who want an AirCat 1150 aren't getting one. There's a lot of channel inventory. So I don't think there's any bare shelves at Home Depot. To my knowledge, I haven't heard anything about that. And I don't think anybody's having a problem getting one of our AirCat tools if they want one.
So if that's the case, then why would our sales levels be down and supply chain somewhat cited is on the sales revenue side. I know in the cost
remember,
side.
Remember, we're not selling directly to anyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this channel inventory. Our customers are the channel distributors. So there's going to be a
so those channel distributors, but those channel distributors are selling this product, right? There's either demand for it or not, and if there's supply chain issues, then that means demand is exceeding supply. So the distributors arguably have the supply, and they're selling the product. That means you're not necessarily selling it. I appreciate that, but why wouldn't in the face of supply chain fear mongering or fear everywhere, why wouldn't the distributors be turning around and ordering from you to refill their inventory so that they're not caught short?
Okay, so let's be clear. Are you talking about Home Depot? Are you talking about industry? Are you talking about AirCap or Jiffy? Which one?
I'm referring to the instances you just cited. How the line of questioning is regarding the idea that supply chain issues have impinged on selling units. We'll get to the cost issue in a second.
They definitely
okay.
Have.
So where does that exist? That would not that doesn't seem to exist in the distribution model you're referring to, where the distributors are clearing out. The distributors are selling into the
right,
consumer
so
or the customer.
I think the question is best answered in pieces. So let's look at look at the Home Depot, our retail business. In the Q3 of 2020, there was a huge surge at Home Depot for two reasons. One, there was all sorts of pent-up demand from Q2 when things were shut down. And second, when things got turned on, we didn't know this, our spray guns were suddenly being used to spray disinfectant. There was a tremendous surge in orders in the third quarter at Home Depot. So that has leveled off. So at Home Depot, I think you're talking about a unique situation. So let's take that one off the table. Jiffy we've already talked about. So that leaves us with industrial and automotive. Industrial I don't have in front of me, but I think industrial has had an improvement from the prior quarter.
It has. Yes, it has.
Okay.
Yes, it has.
You're not asking about industrial. So really you're down to asking about automotive, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's talk about automotive.
I mean, we understand retail because that's primarily Home Depot. Where does, by the way, Amazon fit into all of that? Is that automotive or retail?
Amazon is considered automotive. That's the
okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, we do not sell on Amazon. Our product ends up being sold on Amazon, but it gets there through distribution, various distribution.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, so on the automotive side for the quarter, we were down about 10%. So multiple things going on there. Two major things going on. One, we've had these tremendous delays in importation. So even if vendors want some product, we have had trouble getting it in-house from overseas. And second, on the automotive side, during the third quarter, we made some changes to the way we go to go into the distribution channel and change some things up. So there was a one-time reduction in the inventory levels into the channel. But again, that, in my opinion, has had very little impact in the amount of demand from an individual customer wanting an AirCat 1150 or whatever they want. But the channel has been disrupted. But remember, there's a lot of inventory in the channel, and there's lots of people selling AirCat tools. So if I can't find it on through my regular distribution. I can find it on, I might be able to find it in an internet site from a distributor. I might be able to find it on Amazon. So there are multiple places a person can get a tool. So that inventory in the channel has absorbed our distribution problem, or excuse me, our importation problem. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that
hey,
is what...
Joe, I'm going to cut you off over here if you don't mind. Andrew, in all due respect, we're 40 minutes into this call, and this when this is not a... this is not a drill down into the micromanaging of each of our businesses. I really would appreciate if you could talk about the results. Though the questions you're asking are certainly good questions, and we appreciate them. We're trying to answer.
Richard, I don't understand how these questions are not at the meat of the results, especially to the extent you guys cite
and talk about supply chains,
and there's an inconsistency that Joe has finally helped clarify. I mean, just because you're impatient about it, it's not my problem.
I'm impatient.
I'm not impatient. You have.
Andrew, I'm not going to get into it.
If there's others who have questions, I'm not going to get into a spat with you.
We're not going to talk over each other. I'm just going to tell you that this is a conference call to talk about the quarter, and we're happy to spend as much time as you need to understand the things. We're really happy to do that. But there comes a point that you're drilling down a little too far, and it's not really germane. That's all I'm respectfully asking you to try to keep it more in a global sense. That's all I'm asking you to do. We're happy to answer your questions, and honestly, we want to answer them. You're a stockholder for a long time, and you're entitled to the answers, and anybody else as well. But please just try to be a little more global if you can. And that's all.
Well, I'm sure, and I surely hope there are some members of the board, and then maybe Joe offline can chat with you and explain exactly why and how clearly my questioning, even the little drill down on this particular issue, is very germane. But we'll move on to other questions. But if you have someone else who would like to ask a question, I'll be glad to get out and let someone else in if you have someone who wants to ask a question. But
yes, we have someone in the queue.
I'll back out. I have other questions. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from another follow-up from Minikam Soler, private investor.
Hi again. I'm curious. During the last call, it was briefly mentioned talk about resuming a buyback plan or a dividend. Can you give any update on that?
Yeah. The update is that we discuss it at every board meeting, as well as in between board meetings. And when there's something to report, you'll read about it. We'll be announcing it to the world. There's nothing more to say right now. What I can tell you is that we discuss it. It's on the forefront of our agendas at every board meeting and in between at the audit committee meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So it's definitely something that we talk about, and when there's something to talk about in a more newsworthy fashion, we will absolutely be pointing it out to you.
Okay, so I'm not really asking for you to give up news right now. I'm just wondering what is it that goes into that consideration? Are you waiting for better cash flow, like a stronger balance sheet? What can you share any thought about that?
Yeah, the answer is yes on all those questions. We examine the cash flow of the business, the cash needs of the business, and that's really what we do. The declaration, when we talk about dividends, it depends on the company's financial condition, the results of the operations, all the things I can think about, capital requirements, and any other relevant factors that may at that point. But as of now, we haven't declared anything yet. And we continue to analyze these dividend questions, and we will talk about when there's something to talk about. I promise you that we will be announcing it if and when that time comes.
Okay, thank you. Can I add one more question?
Sure, please.
I'm This is a high-level question. Why is it that you choose not to sell directly to consumers? I'm just curious. Like, you don't have a very strong presence on the Home Depot site or on Amazon, it seems like something to me that the company could take into its own hands to grow its revenue.
Joe, you want to answer that one?
Yeah, let me address that. With respect to Home Depot, we do not dictate to Home Depot what, if any, of our tools end up on the Home Depot site versus what's in the store. Home Depot is a customer. They can choose to go to market in any way they'd like. So there's nothing we can do about that. With respect to Amazon, and why we don't sell directly on Amazon, we don't necessarily want to pick favorites in that we've got multiple ways for one of our customers to get to buying one of our tools. And while it's great that some of them choose to go to Amazon, many of them choose to buy through a local mobile truck. Many of them choose to buy on another website. Many of them choose to buy through other means. So, I think if we just decided we were going to go to Amazon directly, that would be making a bet. But there would be repercussions to the rest of the channel for that, and I'm not sure that's necessarily the best course of action for the most revenue. Having said that, we are on Amazon, we do advertising on Amazon, and I would disagree that we have no presence on Amazon. I think we've done a very good job with that channel and that means of selling our tools. It's by no means the only way we go to market, but I guess I would disagree that we have no presence there. In fact, I think we have one of the most highly rated tools in the category on Amazon. So hopefully that answers your question.
I apologize. I didn't suggest that you have no presence. I was just questioning the lack of direct marketing.
Well, some of our tools really don't lend themselves to direct marketing. The gears don't lend themselves to direct marketing. The industrial tools, to a lesser extent, don't lend themselves to direct marketing. They're require more of an engineered sale. But the tools for Home Depot and the tools for Amazon are, in my view, marketed directly, although there is a level of distribution between us and them and the customer.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll hear again from Andrew Shapiro with Lawndale Capital Management.
Thanks. Carrying over the supply chain issues on the cost side, if everyone is experiencing these same issues, and I believe that is the case, and you're not losing share, can you comment and give more color on the pace of passing through price increases that inevitably would reflect the cost increases on freight, shipping, et cetera, that all of your competitors are also faced with?
I think, Andrew, what you're asking is what was, I think we related it in the press release, actually, but I'll restate it if this is what you're asking. If not, please let me know. We, for the very, very most part, all of our customers, be it our biggest customer to our smallest customer, have been given price increases over the last several months and as recently as, again, last month. And we're continuing to look because prices are still insanely inflationary, as you know. And so we're continuing. It's a moving target. But everybody has been getting price increases. At the time, it was what it was. And now we're looking at it again to see if we need to do it again. I kind of think we don't. I think we're pretty covered at this point. Our margins are holding up and all that stuff, but we're looking further into that. But is that what you're asking me?
Yes. And the customers have, reluctantly absorbed that. They've accepted it and you're selling your units.
Yeah, I mean, it's and we have too. It's unfortunately life in the way of the world right now. Everybody, there's nobody who lives under a rock and doesn't see and hear what's going on, you know, in that venue. And everybody understands it and they know it. And if our president can get a control onto the ports and what the stuff is there and all the other things with inflation. I think I read this morning that inflation is the highest in 30 years now for the last month. If I could, I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I read that this morning on Bloomberg. It's just
the one month print was the highest in, you know, it goes back to the 90s and it includes the energy price and other increases. But yes,
right. We're on all the time.
What's the size? We talked about this in the last quarter, and you guys didn't have the information as of yet and hadn't done the return, but do you have a handle on the size and status of the tax refunds, I guess, that you expect in Q4?
Joe, I'm not sure if we can really talk about
it. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're certainly, you know, we have filed our return. I'm not going to go into exactly what we're hoping to get back, but we expect to get a refund at some point, but honestly, our tax advisors are telling us that, you know, given everybody doing the same thing, it's unclear exactly when we're due a refund and what that refund will be, but it's coming. There is a refund of some sort coming.
Is it meaningful?
Yeah. I don't remember what we said in our filings, but we certainly expect a refund. You know,
any amount is meaningful. You know, I don't know what meaningful is to you. Enough, we can't, you know, but it's, you know,
well,
it comes. We'll,
presumably,
I understand, Andrew. I understand the agenda, but you know, you have to understand it's not public information, and we really can't divulge that. You know, I don't know how else to say it.
First off, here's your public call. Secondly, I was going to ask, it's already been accrued for, right? It's just going to be a matter of cash flow.
Actually, you don't accrue for a potential receipt of a refund. We don't.
Okay. When you take your GAAP provisions, you've been taking GAAP provisions against your pre-tax losses or pre-tax income. Yes. Okay. And because you have your deferred tax thing, and then you get it. So what we're dealing with here is it's not going to be a GAAP reported item as much as it's going to be a cash flow item.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew, once we know what we're getting, we'll have something to say about it, but we don't really know yet.
Okay. And can you provide, you talked a bit about it last quarter, can you provide an update and some more color on your development of cordless models and the type of automotive or non-automotive applications for which PNF is developing cordless models of its tools in either the high-tech or Florida pneumatic side?
Yeah, I don't want to divulge too much about product development for some strategic reasons, there are certain niches where we've got cordless tools under development to sit alongside our, you know, our non-cordless models. But I can't, you know, at some point when they're ready to go, we'll talk about them. They're still under development, and I'm uncomfortable saying even where we plan on selling them for strategic reasons.
Okay. Is there a prospective time range in which the product might be introduced?
I would say in the first half of next year, I'm hoping that we'll introduce something.
Okay. Now, you had sizable gains in the OEM engineered solution side at high-tech. Can you discuss your new products and experience so far, if there's any particular areas or industries and products worthy of a call-out and an elaboration?
I mean, it's really all over the place, as we've said. I don't know anyone I would call out. You know, some of that is just, I think, a rebound. You know, those are obviously cases where we have been able to visit. And I think for the most part, it's current customers that are rebounding a bit as opposed to new customers. So as I think, well, maybe this is sort of implied, given the fact that we're struggling to meet new customers, the best source of growth in some cases is old customers who are just doing better. And I'd say that's probably more of what's going on in OEM, although I think it's both.
And my last question, which is still a function of you guys not issuing the 10Q before the call, and we always have it after the fact, is what's the shares outstanding that's going to be on that cover?
I don't know the answer to that. But if you have another question, perhaps.
And perhaps can you build that into your future, and perhaps can you build that into your future scripts?
The number of shares outstanding, somebody just stuck in front of me, is
3,000,001, Russell.
3,181. I don't think it's changed much, Andrew.
No, that's unchanged. That's no change. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Waleed Alari with a private investor.
Yes, hi, everybody. First, thank you. You're doing an excellent job. I have a question for the infrastructure bill. Is the company going to benefit? I think just the industrial branch, because I don't see any construction tools. Do you think in the future you're going to bore in, or just going to let everything? And perfect job. You're done.
Did you understand the question?
I think I understand the question. Will we benefit from the infrastructure bill? I think the answer to that is yes. Historically, we have sold a lot of tools into bridge repair, bridge construction, road construction, windmill maintenance and construction, railroad maintenance and construction. Those are all part of the infrastructure bill. So while I couldn't point to anything specifically, I'm pretty comfortable that we're gonna share in some of those activities, because they're very consistent with where we've sold tools in the past.
Thank you so much, and great job you did, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and that does conclude the questions in the queue at this time. Turn the conference back over to management for additional or closing remarks.
Okay, nothing further to say other than thank you all for taking the time today. Thank you for all your questions. Hope we gave you more insight than you had beforehand. And we look forward to speaking with you with our year-round call. I believe that's in March. So stay well, stay safe, and happy holidays, everybody.
Thank you. And that does conclude today's conference. We thank you all for your participation, and you may now disconnect.